As I mentioned earlier, I performed a wedding yesterday out in Crystal Lake, Missouri. That's out northeast of Excelsior Springs. And it was at this little clubhouse. It was a very quaint affair. They had about 50 of their friends and family gathered, and there was a little fireplace there we were going to stand in front of. So as the time came to get started, I went up and stood in front of the fireplace, and the groom was standing next to me, and he had his brother with him. We were waiting for the bridesmaids and the ring bearer and flower girl and the bride to come up and come into the room. They're playing the music for that, and I'm standing there, and I just happened to glance over at the groom. And I saw his lip quivering. Not a good sign. Someone was about to lose it. And I'm not talking about a simple tear down the cheek losing it either. We're talking blubbering, babbling, lose it. I've seen this before. I've done over 200 weddings, and I'll tell you right now, it's a fallacy that the bride cries at the wedding. Very rarely have I ever seen a bride cry. Relief is usually the look on the bride's face. 18 months of planning, corralling all of her friends and family to this moment, she's just happy it's done. She's come down the aisle going, praise Jesus, let's get to the bar. Come on. But the grooms always cry. They tear up, they bawl, they lose it. Nothing but a bunch of soft-hearted, lip-quivering masses of jello. So I turn, I see this groom, and his lip is quivering. He makes eye contact with me. And in a soft, strong, knowing voice, I tell him, deep breath, in through your nose, out through your mouth. I demonstrate it as I say it. The fear in his eyes pauses for just a moment. He draws in that deep breath through runny nostrils and exhales it quickly through quivering lips, and they stop quivering. When you factor in all the times that I speak in front of people, weddings and funerals and sermons, this is what I do. This is what I'm gifted at. This is what I know. When couples ask me, when I meet with them about a wedding and they ask why I charge what I charge for a wedding, I tell them it's because you're hiring a professional. Yes, you could get your second cousin Floyd ordained at the Church of the Internet and he can do it for you for free. But when the wheels come off, and at some point the wheels are going to come off, you really want somebody who's been there and done that. I knew that if the groom would take a moment, if he'd take that deep breath, that it calms you down. It pauses the quivering and the crying for a moment. The groom did just fine, by the way. Sometimes I don't finish my stories. He took that breath. I had him take another one right before the bride entered. I looked at him and I was like, do it again. He was fine. A couple tears did trickle down his cheek from moment to moment, but no sobbing, no blubbering, no hysterics, and today, he is husband and she is wife, and it all went well. Today is the Sunday of Epiphany when we celebrate the coming of the Magi, the wise men, to see Jesus after his birth. Epiphany comes 12 days after Christmas. It just so happens today is literally the day of Epiphany, not just the Sunday when we observe it. This is the 12th day after Christmas. Theologically, this recognizes that there was a time span between the birth of Jesus and when the wise men arrived. The wise men play an important role in this story. They deserve their own moment on this stage. They come not representing Judaism or Christianity, they represent the rest of the world. They come from faraway lands where other religions reside. They represent the world coming to see this thing that has happened. They bring gifts to pay homage, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, gifts fit for a king. But they bring more than that with them. They bring a gift that is invaluable to the world. A gift this world needs more than the three gifts of monetary value. What they bring is inherent in their name. They are wise men. They bring wisdom to the new king. How do I know that this gift is brought? Look at their story. They were far away and saw a change in their world, saw a new star rise, and they were wise enough to know that this was not a random occurrence, that something amazing had happened, and they packed up and they left home to go see what it was. How do I know that they have wisdom? When they got lost, they stopped and asked for directions. They stopped at Herod's palace. Now, Herod's referred to as king, but he was actually governor of this province. But they stop at his palace to say, "Hey, we've come to see the new king." Herod is, of course, a little bothered by that. When you are the king, to hear that there's a new king is disconcerting. But he hides it. He finds out where the new king, the Messiah, should have been born. He gives them directions and tells them, "On your way back, stop and tell me where I might find the new king. I would like to pay him a visit as well." They continue on their way. They follow the star. The star stops over the home where Jesus is. They go in and take their gifts. But then when they get ready to leave, having been warned in a dream, they go home by a different route. They avoid Herod altogether. That is wisdom. Wisdom to know when an authoritative power is giving an unjust order. They knew that that was nothing but trouble. And wisdom told them, "Why don't we go home this way?" Wisdom is the voice of experience. Wisdom is the voice of know-how, the voice of been there and done that. Knowledge is great. Intelligence is important, smarts, but wisdom is different. Wisdom isn't natural. You aren't born with wisdom. You can be born with intelligence, but you got to earn wisdom. Wisdom comes from walking the path. Wisdom comes from being on the journey for a while. Wisdom comes from seeing and doing and failing and succeeding. These are the seeds of wisdom. I used to play racquetball. We had a YMCA over in Independence that had three racquetball courts. And I loved playing racquetball. So my wife and I played quite a bit. One day while we were playing, all the courts were full, and these two older gentlemen stepped onto our court and said, "Would you guys be interested in playing doubles?" Now, we easily had 30 years on these guys. One of them walked with a pronounced limp. I thought, "Oh, I'm going to hurt Grandpa here." I was still young enough that my knees didn't ache. I was still young enough that I had a pretty good swing. I was still young enough, I didn't mind banging into the walls as I played. They kicked our butts. Soundly. They were not as athletic as we were, but they knew stuff. They knew how the ball bounced. They understood the angles and trajectories and velocity. They knew how to work the corners. They knew where the ball was going to wind up. They didn't have to chase it to where it was because it was soon going to be here. We may have had youth and energy on them, but these two old guys had something we didn't have. They had wisdom of that game. Wisdom comes with age. Teenagers don't have wisdom. Teenagers are smart, they're bright, they're intelligent, but they're not wise. Wisdom comes with gray hair and achy knees and crooked backs. Wisdom comes with time. And of all the gifts brought to Jesus, this is the one most valued. This is the one most needed. This is the one that's going to last. We need wisdom in our world. We need wise men and women, wise people to rise up, to help us, to guide us, to counsel us. Wisdom is sorely lacking far too often. We have smart people. We have knowledge. With technology, we have access to more unlimited knowledge than has ever been known. But we need wisdom. 9 years ago, when I had first come to this church, I'd been here all of a month, not even, when we were approached by a pastor who had a new church start. It was about 7 years old. They were looking, they'd been meeting in a school, they were looking to find a church. They wanted to find an older church to partner with, to join with, to create something new. They had in abundance young people and young families, but they were floundering a bit. They weren't sure what their path was, so they approached us about this idea. We were lacking young families. So it was an interesting idea to consider. An influx of younger people, moms, dads, kids, what might that do? But they recognized and voiced that they were missing something just as dire. They didn't have any elderly people in their congregation. Their oldest members were in their 50s. They recognized that they were missing a crucial piece, a crucial voice in the church. They were missing wisdom. The wisdom that comes from walking this journey for 70, 80, 90 years. The wisdom that comes from having fallen down more than once, but also having got back up. The wisdom that has seen what this world can throw at you and has made it through it time and time again. The wisdom of having been through many storms with the faith that Jesus was in the boat too. They realized this was a vital piece of church and they didn't have it. We did in spades. Ultimately, the talks fell through when they discovered the intricacies of Disciples of Christ polity. We are a congregationally based denomination. That means the true power is held in your hands, the congregation. At any moment, one of you can stand up and call a congregational meeting in 30 days to vote for my ouster. And that terrified him. He could not understand how you could serve in a church where the people had the power to kick you out. He told me, "They can't do that to me. This is my church. I started it." And my fledgling wisdom answered back, "It's not your church. It's God's church." We have wisdom. It is one of our strengths. When you glance around and see white heads and aging membership, some might see weakness and worry, but I see strength and hope. Merriam Christian Church next month will be 106 years old. We've been a cornerstone in this community longer than any other church. Some of you have been members of this church for 50, 60, almost 70 years. You are the very definition of been there, done that. When we look at this new year upon us and wonder what it has in store for us, what God will lead us to, what purpose we will find, and you make a mental list of our gifts and our abilities and our strengths, wisdom should be at the top of that list. It is wisdom we look for in our leaders, our deacons, our elders. Wisdom to discern God's call for themselves, for their family, for this church. Wisdom that calms our spirits and steadies our hand and helps us to look into the future with hope and peace, not dread or worry. Wisdom that reminds us not to worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to have enough worries of its own, but to face today knowing that God is on this path with us. Wisdom that can ignore the din of this world and listen for the whisper of the Holy Spirit. Wisdom to take each day as it comes. To pray a little, to praise a little, to hold hands as the body of Christ and face it together. the wise men came seeking a new king. They brought their earthly gifts worth much money, but they brought something far more valuable to the young child. They brought wisdom. We bring the same to this church, to this community, and to this world, but we must choose to bring it. We must choose to use it. We must choose to offer it. The